テクニカルトークなんですか。
So as Solin told, it's a group measure space construction is that starting from group action, which is assumed to be probability measure preserving and free and ergodic. From this you construct a pair of von Neumann algebras. One is just a function algebra and it fits inside the crossed product von Neumann algebra. This is called, this part is as Solin defined, it's Cartan subalgebra. And the information it has is a orbit equivalence relation. And from this I just forget the position of Cartan subalgebra and consider the von Neumann algebra. It's now called the W star equivalence. So this is just a conjugacy, they're classified up to conjugacy, group action is classified up to conjugacy. And the problem is that to what extent this orbit equivalence remembers the group action, or to what extent this remembers this or that. This is a question we are working on. And this part, there's a lot of result, actually. First result, that first complete information that this orbit equivalence contains was proved by Fuhrman based on Zimmer's result. And then Popper Solin gave a completely different approach to this problem and worked on Bernoulli shift and so on. And there's another, nowadays there's another reason. Results, and one is due to KIDA, which is very surprising, that mapping across group have orbit equivalence rigidity for any action, and other result is due to Adrian Ioana, which he will present anyway. And there's a little weaker work is due to Mono and Shalom. They worked on the group which is free group times free group type, and in this setting you cannot expect full generality of cocycle super rigidity or something. You have to assume it's a strong rigidity type. You have to assume the target side has some property also. And Ioana's case is profinite action and group is property T. And recently we got that some polynomial algebra remembers the position of Cartan, which means it has unique Cartan subalgebra, and this is 0.7. And this action is actually, as Solin also already told that it's profinite plus free group, or free group times free group, or so like that. So at this moment there is no intersection. You see profinite, there is profinite, but the free group does not have property T, and Mono Shalom result is not as strong as recovering these two here. So at this point we don't have any example that with von Neumann algebra which remembers all the group action completely. Okay, that's the status of the theory. So I define profinite action. Profinite action, all actions are probability measure preserving. That profinite is profinite. By definition, x is projective limit of finite measure space, which got marked on this finite measure space. So, and got marked on Xn. This is finite. So by ergodicity assumption, if you assume it's ergodic, any finite measure space which gamma is of this form gamma over subgroup gamma n. So it's a sequence of subgroups. They are all finite index because xn is finite. And gamma acts on this quotient by from the left. It's clear. Yes. And there are some conditions which ensures that if it's whether it's free or not anyway. And in the normal algebra setting, this is nothing but actually AF action, that L infinity X is same as the direct union of L infinity X N, which is just finite dimensional algebra, and on which it's at. And in the setting, it's L infinity gamma over gamma n fits inside L infinity gamma over gamma n plus 1. They all fit inside gamma, L infinity gamma. That this is just a function, function here, which is invariant under right gamma in action, yes? And there's increasing union. But the topology is different. They have all finite trace, that trace is normalized. So that when you take closure, you don't get this one, you get this one, yes? And more generally, we say that gamma acting on P is now von Neumann algebra, finite von Neumann algebra. And for action, I always assume it's trace preserving. Yes, there's a fixed trace. When I talk von Neumann algebra, it has fixed trace, and any action is fixed in that trace. Yes? It's for finite, or actually AF. That P is a union, increasing union of finite dimensionals. Of course, finite dimensional von Neumann algebras. And gamma acts on Pn. That gamma leaves Pn invariant. The finiteness is used in this form that usually, it's actually same as Ioana's case, it's used in this form. That there exists eta n in L2 Pn, tensor Pn, complex conjugate, which corresponds to the element identity in the Hilbert-Schmidt operators. That this, it's well known that this, that the tensor product of Hilbert space with its conjugate is isomorphic as the Hilbert-Schmidt operators on L2P. Yeah? But Hilbert-Schmidt, but trace is not a big trace, it's this finite trace on finite von Neumann algebra. But so the defining relation is that the A tensor B complex conjugate, eta n, is half A, B star, A, 1, say 1, B star, 1, or 1 star, it's 1. It's half A, B star. Yeah? So it's unit vector. And this has the following properties, that D tensor B bar eta n is eta n for any V in unitary element of Pn. It's Pn, sorry. Unitary element of Pn. Because here, because there is one identity is in the Hilbert-Schmidt class because it's finite dimensional, yes? This is clear, yeah? That if you put the Vn in front or in back, I don't know, it cancels anyway. And the action was, I denote action by sigma. But this is invariant, even invariant under the action of sigma, yeah? This group action, because Pn is invariant under sigma, so So sigma restrict to axon on, well, restrict to unitary on L2P, L2PN, and it of course sigma G, well, identity is identity. So that's it. And finally, condition three is that this eta n, if you take inner product, then you get twice x. But that the finite mesh is not orbit equivalence invariant. It's not written anywhere, I think, but it's not. Anyway, so one has to introduce weaker version. Oh, by the way, so finiteness. So other part for finiteness you get used is that the peak cross gamma for normal algebra is actually PN cross gamma, but it's union of PN cross gamma, but actually union and cross product commute because it's invariant. Yeah. Which is something more or less like matrix algebra over L gamma union. So definition is that now we say it's weakly compact. It was called weakly profinite, but now it's called weakly compact, suggested by Adrian Iwana. That weakly compact means that there exists eta n in L2P tensor, L2P bar or P bar, it's the same. But I choose it from positive part. Positive means positive as a non-commutative L2. Such that they alternate becomes approximate setting. This two norm tends to zero, any being unitary T, and sigma G invariant approximately. Eta n minus eta n tends to zero, any G. And finally, one can replace this with approximate condition, but I actually use the rigid condition, it's equal for any n, any x in P and any n. Because if it approximates, then it's approximation that this is a weak star, this is normal state on P, and if it's approximate twice, then it's approximate in the weak topology, and by convex combination and some perturbation, you can replace it to the rigid exact form, and when I prove something, I use this exact form, so. But you can replace it to just limit as well. They are equivalent. And this, they imply this condition, this implies this condition, profinite implies this condition, because this is true for any B in the union of PNs. But this condition means that you can perturb this part little and it doesn't change much to norm. And actually the right hand side too. One has to write it, but anyway, yes. And this condition is actually all zero for any n. And this condition is that if you take inner product of this, actually this factors through the conditional expectation onto Pn in this case, and it's twice preserving, conditional expectation is twice preserving. So they imply this. And why we call this weakly compact is that if the action is compact, meaning that this gamma has a closure in the automorphism group of P is compact in the pointwise weak star to pointwise ultra weak topology, then it has this property. So it's weaker than compact. Compact is weaker than profinite. Yes. And if you are familiar with the standard, this P, what? hypertrace business, then you get this weak compactness is equivalent to that there exists state phi on B of L2P such that phi is invariant under the add action V. That add you know that V to it conjugate by V. And this turns to this thing becomes phi is invariant under add to sigma G. Here sigma G is action on P that it has some automorphism on P, but I identified it with a unitary on L2P. Yes? So add sigma G, this sigma G is unitary element on L2P. So this makes sense here. Yes? And this, as I taking limit, you get this and this, and taking limit, it feels restricted to P is a twice. Phi x by you define phi x by a limit of some limit, but limit may not convergent. So you take some ultra limit of this of that form x tends to 1, eta n. And this part cancels always if you put it here. Yeah? So it's very well known that this property is said. This property is called the P central state, and the condition this 1 and 3 is just saying that P is amenable, yeah? Or P is injective. But this amenable mean, if it's amenable, it has invariant mean. That, but this invariant means even under invariant under conjugation by gamma, that's a weak compactness. And we need further property that which is complete metric approximation property. Now M is a Feynman algebra. In general M is this guy. That P is Feynman algebra inside M. That's generally. But both they are anyway all Feynman algebras. But when I use M, I have in mind this Feynman algebra, and when I use P, I have in mind subalgebra. Okay, M has a complete metric approximation property. If there exists a map theta n from M to M, which is Normal just means ultra weakly continuous, because it's not positive. Normal usually defined for only positive functional, but it's just ultra weakly continuous. Yeah? Finite rank. And theta n converges the identity in the two ultra weak topology, or two ultra strong topology. Anyway, you can take convex combination. Such that, and it's bounded. The norm is uniformly bounded, but CB norm is uniformly bounded. Limit soup. This is important. It's limit soup, yes. Oh, but actually not important. Oh, because I didn't assume it's unitary. Okay, it's limit soup or soup. I don't care. Limit soup. Yeah, M is injective or amenable if you can take a normal finite rank map with this property, and this has a completely positive map, automatically CD norm 1 if it's unitary. And so it's a weaker version. And the theorem of Hagerup or Dohanier-Hagerup. R or N has 2. I guess R has 2. 2N and 1R. Hold up. But they prove that free group for normal algebra has this property. Yeah, that actually their proof was different, but there's a Hausdorff multiplier which we obtained earlier, which means that actually he obtained earlier that from this has a metric approximation property, which means this CD is replaced with just norm, and Dohnányi-Hausdorff obtained its complete metric approximation property. That we this is a Hausdorff multiplier FR to LFR, which sends lambda G to T to the length G, lambda G, it's multiplier, and T is between 0 and 1. And what Hausdorff showed is that it's completely positive, unitary completely positive. But this isn't finite rank because it's non-zero always. But it's compact. It tends to zero. And if you use Bojeko-Picabello inequality, or if you use complex analysis method, that actually this extends to whole region, whole disk by analytic extension. It has analytic extension to whole disk. But it's not, because in that case, they need not be unitary completely positive, but anyway. And anyway, there's methods that one can cut the tail, the small part, and make it finite rank. And in this process, this positivity gets lost. But CD norm is controlled. This has CD norm 1 because it's completely positive and unitary. Now the theorem we proved is that theorem A, if P is subalgebra of M and M has a complete metric approximation property, then the normalizer of P, which appeared in the following talk as well, it's a unitary element in M, but it conjugates P into P, onto P. Normalizer of P acts P weakly compact, acts by Yukos conjugation, yes? Oh, yeah. Thank you, of course. P is amenable, or injective, they are saying. But this can be, of course, our definition of weak compactness implies amenability, so one has to assume that, yes. Thank you. And the theorem B, the same, yes. The theorem B is that the now M is a cross product by free group or free group times free group, or in that case it becomes more complicated. So I just take in the simplest case, it's free group. And action need not be ergodic nor free and anything. And the Q can be arbitrary, finite from name algebra. And P is inside M. And I assume this is weakly compact. No, that assumption is that normalizer acts weakly compact. So in practice, unless one has this assumption, this condition, you don't know if P is weakly compact, if P was arbitrary. Yes. Then the conclusion is that it's either they are mutually exclusive. Either a corner of P, a non-zero corner of P, This is always Sorin does in recently. The non-zero corner of P is conjugated into Q. But there is some, if you cut some piece, then it's conjugated into Q. And in this case, the normalizer is big, because normalizer basically contains some piece of free group, and which is non-amenable, of course. Or this normalizer is small. So normalizer is either big or small. It's small. It's amenable. But amenable relative to Q. And the corollary is that corollary is the one get corollary whenever you can check that M has a complete metric approximation property. That when Q is, for example, Q is one dimensional, then the statement reads as follows: P is in LFR, which is diffuse, because I don't want it's a corner of P is embedded into one dimensional, which means it has minimal projection. Then the normalizer of P generates still amenable relative to one dimensional means amenable, although I didn't define. So this generalizes strengths in Boyklescu's result. Boyklescu's result says that this cannot be whole LFFR. And of course LFFR isn't amenable, so this strength in Boyklescu. And strength in my result as well. That my result was that commutant is amenable, and commutant any commuting unitary is seen inside normalized. And the second case is this is trivial action. So M for trivial action. That Q tensor free group factor has no Cartan. If I guess this condition is redundant, but we couldn't prove it. If Q has schema. Three is it's a gamma acting on X is profinite. If gamma acting on X is profinite and free and ergodic, then this L infinity X is a unique Cartan. The closed product, even unique up to unitary conjugacy. Because the if action is profinite, phonema algebra is of this form, and it's a union of free group factors over matrix, and the free group factor has always complete metric approximation property, and this property clearly passes to directed union. So in this case also this has schema is automatically follows. And any subalgebra has this weak compactness, satisfies weak compactness. So from now I talk about proof of theorems. That actually the first proof I gave in the preprint was very complicated, but now it's much simpler, and it's it seems it was posted and it will appear tonight in archive. Okay. Yes. Define omega n a tensor B bar is tau this theta n A B star for A and B in M theta is this theta and then because theta n is a finite rank and normal fit means theta n is theta if any finite rank map by linear algebra it have of this form yes k is 1 to rank and it's normal so it actually split on the both sides and so omega n is actually in the defined over all from name algebra and even it's ultra weakly contains because it's split as a normal state tensor normal state and some weight but there's no control of norm so we define omega n p to be omega n restricted to p tensor p bar Then this form is actually theta n A as B star 1 hat on L2M. And it's same as here. Then because P is amenable, it's omega n P. Now it's there's control of norm. This norm is controlled by first I take minimal tensor product of theta n tensor identity which is theta n CB norm and the representation that if P is amenable if and only if left and right representation extends extends to a minimal tensor product in norm so this you can compute the norm on minimal tensor product sister tensor product of P tensor P bar but because it's normal it's enough one gets this, it's approximately one by C-map. Where C-map appears, actually there is a condition that you change this one to any finite number, any C, you get completely bounded approximation property, but the theorem doesn't work for that. There should be some smart way to adapt something in that case too, but it's not known. I need this one. And omega nt, one tensor one, is close to one. It's tau c tau, because it's tau theta n, one, one, is close to one. And as well, omega nt, vb star, is close to one, any v in unitary of p. Then everything, when n tends to infinity, yes? And if it's linear functional is almost norm 1 and it takes 1 after identity, it's almost state positive, yes? It's almost positive and it almost leaves Bn, Bb star, Bb tensor B bar invariant, which means this immediately implies by just looking at the GNS representation, this immediately implies what? Omega n p v tensor b bar dot is almost as a linear function at its close, yes, in norm. So I define eta n to be this positive, that absolute value in the as a linear functional or in L1, non-commutative L1 space, and take square root. Then eta n satisfies the first condition, and it's approximate version of the third condition. Yes? If you restrict it to x tensor 1, it's just theta n x, twice, it's close to twice. Well, one could have theta n this side as well. And the one second condition is satisfied is that the and Y. This is because I consider the, what is G, sorry. Action is addu, given by the adjoint of U. U is the normalized of T. That's the action. Why this is true? Is that I consider the P tilde by for name algebra generated P and this single unitary U. If you add the single unitary U from normalizer, it's almost cross the product and it's still amenable for name algebra. You can check it. So from what we did, just replacing P with P tilde, you get this is approximately same as P tilde silk add U tensor U bar as a linear functional, because U tensor U bar, this takes value almost 1 at U tensor U bar. You can put on the both sides, left side and right side by just looking at the GNS representation. And just one district to P. Restriction to P. You get omega n P is close to omega n P. Now adjoint action leaves P invariant, so it's okay. So by taking the absolute value and taking square root, you get when you take square root, you need power stomma type inequality anyway. Eta n is close to U tensor U bar. Well, actually, which kind of identification you use, that it might be star here. But I don't care because you can replace it here, yes. It's same anyway. So that's the proof. For the proof of the theorem B, we need a deformation. That deformation appears always in recent work particularly Popper. Yes? This is used by deformation. This was used by Sorin to give another proof of solidity of free group factor. That I consider the free group is generated by A1, this canonical generator. For simplicity, I assume R is finite. Well, actually, it works for as well for infinite case, but I assume it's finite. And I prepare a copy of it. This is just a copy of it, but to distinguish first one and second one, I put tilde. Yeah. And these are canonical generators, but I view them as a unitary operator. So it's M is L of FR, and M tilde is L of FR times free product is FR tilde. I view them as a unitary element in M tilde. Then I define automorphism, not automorphism, actually it's automorphism, but I define staff morphism for T in real number by I map AK to BK to T power AK. And if you want to extend to whole M tilde, you map BK to BK. Well, T power is just, you use some BK T power, it's just exponential of T of log BK, of course. But the log is taking this principal branch. Yeah. But anyway, it's hard unitary, so it doesn't usually matter. But by this case, this operator becomes symmetric, becomes what? Symmetric spectrum. And so by this you get, you compute twice. Twice is easily computed and you get this value. Sine pi t over pi t. Which I define gamma t. And it's important to do this because gamma t is symmetric and that is, so gamma minus t is gamma t. And why this is this defined Stahl morphism is clear that AKs are free unitary, free Hall unitary, and the right hand side is also free Hall unitary, so they generate the same Fonheim algebra. And the lemma we use is that I use alpha t mapping from M to M tilde, and then apply conditional expectation. This is conditional expectation onto M. And you will see this kind of thing in Shiraktenko's talk later, perhaps. Yes. This is actually coincide with Hausdorff multiplier. Actually, I'm starting the proof of theorem B only for Q is C1. Q is identity, complex number, for simplicity. Everything can be relativized, but anyway. This is how the multiplier there. The proof is simple that for example, I consider the following element, A1, A2, A2. This is mapped by alpha t in the following, BA1 inverse, B1 minus t, B2 t, A2, B2 t, A2, yes, by alpha t. But the point is that they are mutually free because this is a reduced form. You don't have A1 inverse A1, of course. Then these are mutually free. And if you apply expectation onto M free group factor, then this B part all killed. But B part, B has a twice. B has actually twice is gamma t. So when you expect onto the EM, you get twice value of this. And twice value of minus t is the same as twice value of gamma t, so you get gamma t cube, A1 inverse, A2, A2. Because whenever B meets it's different index. And otherwise, everything is pinched by A, so and they are free. So that's a Hausdorff multiplier. It's phi gamma t. This A1 inverse A to A2. The point of this lemma is that this deformation composed with conditional expectation is a compact operator. It's a compact map. Hausdorff multiplier is a compact map. So I, as a corollary, you see that I use EM. EM, I use EM as well as a projection to L2M tilde to L2M. Yes. Alpha t is now its isometry from L2M into L2M tilde. It's compact. It's a compact operator in the usual meaning. This maps from L to M to L to M and it's compact. And the final property we require is that if you look at the orthogonal complement of L to M inside L to M tilde, this is decomposed into L to M tensor L to M. Of course, they are Hilbert space anyway. As an M by module. The proof is there's not too many times. Proof is simple. It's L2 FR tends free product with FR tilde, set minus FR. So it's canonically, this part canonically decomposes into FR times something word times FR. And this initial and final letters from in the reduced form from FR tilde, and they cannot interfere that multiplying from left by element in FR cannot interfere here. So they decompose into just tensor product of this and direct sum over these letters. So I give a proof of theorem being case Q is just one dimensional here. Yeah? I cannot stop give full detail of proof or but anyway, yes. It's actually very simple, and indeed it one can give a full detail of proof. That's right. And P is diffuse. So that dichotomy is killed, and I need to show that normalized generates are amenable for my algebra. So I consider the following vector alpha t tensor 1 eta n. Eta n is approximately invariant under left multiplication by unitary VB bar, B tensor V bar, and adjoint of U tensor U bar for normalizing unitary. This is inside of L2M tilde tensor L2, actually P, but L2M. Here eta n is this. I should not have erased, but anyway, I erased. Okay, you remember. Then it immediately you get the following alpha t tensor 1 eta n is 2 norm. So x is in m tilde is the same as the trace norm of x. Because alpha t preserves trace, yes? That this form you just apply conditional expectation onto alpha t m of the x star x, and then take a trace which same as trace. Or anyway, you can extend this to automorphism, and this condition free that if there's no alpha t, it's that way, and you can put alpha t in this side if you want. And because of this condition, you can perturb this side in two norm, and that doesn't bother the two norm estimate of whole thing. So if I consider U tensor U bar, that U is in normalizer of P, any, I consider the commutator of this vector. This might be abuse of notation, but just because this is bimodule, it's U tensor U bar acts from left and right. This is dominated by 2, because it's commutator, U minus alpha T U, 2 norm, plus commutator of U tensor U bar and eta n, 2. And by assumption, this tends to, both tends to zero, that when t tends to zero, above side tends to zero, t is greater than one, usually. And when n tends to infinity, this tends to zero. Yes? And finally one has the following, that If you take orthogonal projection onto M and alpha t tensor 1 eta n this two norm tends to zero as n tends, as t fixed. T fixed and n tends to infinity. Why this is true is that but eta n is almost p invariant mean. That eta n is almost p invariant mean means that if it's L2p, it's supported on the diagonals, almost supported on diagonals, and em alpha p is a compact operator, so it's just finite rank operator, and it's infinite dimensional. So if you take this, the volume of measure of this, this part, it tends to zero. Well, this eta n, anyway, x tends to 1, eta n tends to invariant mean, and invariant that p central state, and p central on state on b of L2p, and p is diffuse, so it kills any compact operator anyway. That's the reason. So one gets that em orthogonal projection, it's orthogonal projection, it's 1 minus em, alpha p tends to 1, eta n. This is approximately, as n tends to infinity, this is approximately alpha t tends to 1, eta n. So I define it as zeta t n. But zeta t n, where does this live? It lives in orthogonal complement of L2 m tilde minus L2 m, so I define it h. So it's in H tensor L2M. And the property I use H is that H is actually split M module, but what I use is that M, left M action, the left M action extends to, just it I need, it's weakly contained in the by cross by module, extends to pi from B of L2M. Acting on H from left, yes? The commutes with right M action. B of H action, B of L2 M action commutes with right M action. So I define phi on B of L2 M by phi x is limit is alpha limit, which converges, t tends to 0, n tends to infinity. X tends to 1, zeta tn, zeta tn. And you check that, just in check the properties of this state. Check that phi, if you take a joint of U, so phi, say phi u star x, what is this? Pi x, sorry. Because I use b of h. Or b of l to m. Is pi x tensor 1, u tensor u bar, zeta, u tensor zeta something, u tensor u bar, zeta, u tensor u bar, zeta. Zeta u tensor u bar. Limit. Yes? But you only appear here and there, but the other u's are all cancelled because this action is from left action, that it cancels, this part also cancels. Okay. So it's Cx. Any u in normalize of p. And as well, phi restricted to m. Actually, no, not only normalizer, but phi restricted to m is tau. Because it's almost alpha t eta n, and alpha t eta n is a place vector. So phi is this central state, and it's twice on n. So this by weak star continuity, actually this you can generalize to any unitary in normalizer P. So this means phi AX is phi XA N A in normalizer P and N X in B of L2 M. This is a invariant mean on this non-normalizable, which means this is a mean of it. Okay. Yes. That's it. Thank you.